and 99.5 FM on your dial. In the studio with me, my associate and dear friend, Ori Yamini Morrison, and Julian Joiello, of course. Plays many roles. Today we're going to talk about relationships again, and I was thinking about the different variations with relationships. There are so many different types. So I thought about it, and I said, lately when I was walking down the street, I saw these new dogs. You know these hybrid dogs that are out there? Different mixtures of different dogs. And I said, oh, you know, that must be a crack-a-doodle or whatever they call these things nowadays. And we did just a little check on the internet. Julian.
Yes, I went through the thousands and thousands of different kinds of mixes, and a couple of the ones that I liked were the Bullador, the English Bulldog, and the Labrador Retriever. Chimation, Chihuahua and Dalmatian. Corgi Poo, Corgi and Poodle Mix. Krusty, the Chinese Crested and the Yorkshire Terrier. And, of course, the Docker, which is the Dachshund and Cocker Spaniel.
These are just a few of the
just
names.
Couple.
Run down the list of A's just in alphabetical order. Go ahead. Do them fast.
All right, the list of A's.
The A dogs. Afghanistan, Afghan. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of names. For now, we have mixed breeds. Now, what does that do with the temperaments of the dogs? You know the temperament of a poodle compared to the temperament of a great Saint Bernard? When you put those two together, what happens inside this new dog? What's his feeling like? Well, I thought about this. I thought about it with flowers. I have a lot of orchids around my life. For some reason or other, they grow back and they keep coming back. And I look at some of the variations on the orchids. Some orchids look one way, some look another way. But many of them are hybrids. They combine with each other. How do they get along? Which one? One takes a lot of no soil at all. One takes a little water. How do you really feed these? Well, then I think about relationships. And I think about when I was a kid, when we went to an Italian wedding, which were called football weddings. You don't know what a football wedding is? Well, let me describe a football wedding. A football wedding was something that cost about $500. There were sandwiches. There's going to be somebody out there who remembers this. They made sandwiches on soft Kaiser rolls, and they had ham and cheese as one sandwich. Salami and cheese was another sandwich. And then there were a bunch of them, just plain cheese with a third one. And there was a whole bunch of sandwiches, and they were all wrapped in plastic, and they had a little label on top of them telling you what they were. Why this is called a football wedding is you get a plate full of these sandwiches and a keg of beer at every table and some soda. Somewhere along the wedding, someone yells out from one table to the next, "Hey, you got any ham and cheese?" And so from your side of the table, you throw it. It's a perfect throwing thing. And the person grabs it. And they grab it and they say, yeah. And they throw them back a salami. Now, this is all well and good, but both families are lined up on both sides of the dance floor. His family's on one side, her family's on the other. What makes it a football wedding is when somebody from the other family starts asking for something from your side of the family and the footballs start flying across the dance floor. This is beautiful. This was a very inexpensive wedding. It was something that I was so used to seeing as a kid. Football weddings. Somebody should be doing them nowadays, even though they probably do it with tofu. So, but the thing about it was, these are just two families getting together. What if they were from two parts of Italy? Northern Italians, Southern Italians. What's the temperament going to be like in the house? Now we go further than that. What happens when one culture marries another culture? When you have an Italian person marrying a German person? Can you imagine what that's like? The Italian person is very emotional. The German person is very thoughtful, thinking. Little like we said on the program yesterday, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. You know, trying to control it, trying to be reasonable. So it is very difficult when you think about it. For two people to get together and just biologically only get along. So what happens is you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, and everything is nice. Then you get married and you form a family, and the two of you are together. Now the two of you are together, and you're trying to ask yourselves, how are we going to adapt to each other? How are we going to live in this place? And a number of things happen, not all positive. Very often and most frequently, relationships become dull. Dull, you just don't want to argue anymore. So you dull out. You don't talk about anything. You don't say anything. He watches football. She does her shopping online. That's it. And you just really are dull. That's one kind of relationship. Another kind of relationship is one where people feel animosity towards each other. They actually, one or the other person hates each other, or one. An example of that would be somebody who nags, but the other person doesn't want to fight back. Instead, he sits there, and as he watches her nagging, he's thinking in his mind, if only I could throw acid on her face. He hates her. While she's yelling at him and he's nodding approval, saying, yes, honey, yes, yes. But he has hatred. And I know men like this. They hate their wives, hate them. If their wives died in a car accident, they would feel relieved. A third kind of relationship is one that is a pure love relationship. It's gorgeous. It's early on. The two of you have so much love for each other and you maintain it. So that's a possibility too. And then there's the friendship kind of relationship where the two of you get together and you realize you're such good friends. Sex no longer matters. You become buddies, pals, roommates, and you get along beautifully this way as long as you keep your passions out of it. On the other hand, there's another form of relationship that's all passionate. It's all sexual. I'll keep you turned on, you keep me turned on. And everything deals with the sex itself. As long as we're having sex, we're okay. This is Armand DeMille with you, with my two friends with the positive mind. We're going to take your calls, too, later, and we want to find out about your kind of relationships. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Where do you plug into these groups? Then there's a competitive relationship. Two people get together. They're in their 20s or 30s, and they compete with each other. They truly compete with each other. Do you know of relationships like this, Julian? Have you ever seen them? Where they're almost in competition with each other. They up each other, you know? They talk.
Oh, yeah, it's constantly talking about, like, oh, I'm best friends with this person, or I know this guy, or I'm running this much today, or, you know, it's all. It actually, they get very athletic, too, like physically competitive.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I'm going out and running every day. What about you? And they try to challenge each other in that sense, too.
Then there's the parental relationship. The parental relationship is one where one person, of course these all mix up, where one person becomes the adult who's chastising a child. So that happens so often, where you become the master and your other person becomes the child, and now you're the mother nagging her son, or you're the father nagging his daughter. Or son, whichever way it goes. And those are very clear, the daddy-daughter relationships, the mother-son relationships. Another frequent way that people adapt to being together when they don't know how to do it is they base everything on a lie. I lie to you, you lie to me. I never tell you the truth. You never tell me the truth. And people lie to each other. Where were you? Well, I was out, just took a walk around the block. Instead of, I was having a drink with my friends. You just must lie. In this way, you're always avoiding being seen. And since it's acceptable that everyone is lying, nobody trusts anybody. So when she's talking to her friends, she said, well, he said he was at work, but you know the way he is. He never tells the truth. You know the way they are. They don't tell the truth. Lie-based relationships are very frequent. Then there's fantasy relationships. A fantasy relationship is a relationship where one person builds a beautiful house in her mind or his mind, and they say, we have a perfect relationship. And they live idyllic relationship. Everything is ideal. Everything is perfect. Everything I see fits into my perfect picture. He, on the other hand, sees that she's living this way, and he says, well, that's okay. She can have her fantasy. I don't want to interrupt her fantasy. But he's completely different. He may be having an affair off somewhere else, which she doesn't see, as long as she has her fantasy. Another is a dominant-submissive relationship, very often, which is like the parent-child relationship. But in the dominant-submissive relationship, there is a show of force. The bigger person basically says, you don't have a right to do anything because I have more power than you. And the other person feels powerless. Another frequent one is the enabler. The enabler-addict relationship. That's always, to me, it's a menage a trois. The man or the woman has an addiction. They may be addicted to marijuana, they may be addicted to cocaine or alcohol or something else. And so their real relationship is with the other substance, with the substance itself. Their mate becomes the enabler. They, in some way, help the person stay in that other relationship. And they don't know it, of course. That's why there are groups for that. So just to run down a bunch of different ways that people do it for you. So imagine if you're somebody who's perfectionistic, right? And your role is to always make sure that your partner is trying to be perfect and you're trying to be perfect and you see them as a reflection of you. So that's one intensity, right? Another could be the relationship where you're always serving. You feel like you've got to serve your partner and you have to take care of them because if you love them and you serve them, they're going to serve you back. A third is how it looks to society. How do we want to look to everybody else? And it's more important as to how we are seen by others than the actual way we are. It doesn't matter the way we are, but how are we seen? What do people say about us? Another approach to relationships is this deep angst, this pain, this intensity, this deep, deep relationship that goes so deep it becomes spiritual, but it just rips at your heart. And you take it as your meaning of depth in your life. It makes you feel alive. Another approach to relationships is to be completely removed. You're down in the cellar. They're upstairs. You're in your private world. They can't get through to you in any way. But you come out, you look social, but you live in your cave and they're not invited. Another frequent approach to relationships is two people being scared. They're worried about everything and they warn everybody. They warn each other about the outside. It's like a mutual paranoia. You know, the danger of this, the danger of that. This is dangerous, that person was saying, and they kind of get together and collaborate. When you listen to a couple of people, on older people talking on benches, you hear this happening very often. You know, they'll be collaborating with each other, complaining about the dangers of the universe. Another form of people in relationships is people who are always playing. They're always playing. They never settle on the ground. They don't hold each other. They're always going to be at the top. They're going to be having a fun time, a fun time. It's all about the party. And one of the last forms is this controlling relationship, this relationship where you fight for control all the time. You're trying to fight with your partner about who's in charge. And the last one is where you go to sleep. You just don't care anymore. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Which of those are you? 212-957-2729. Which of these gives you the feeling that, you know, they've just identified myself in that relationship?
For me, yeah. I can see a lot of people that I work with. I could see all the different styles. And sometimes it shifts. It starts a certain way, and then 3 years later, the relationship shifts to another type of relationship. So you can start with the perfect. We have the perfect relationship, and we compete with each other. We challenge each other. And 3 years later, it shifts to one is a lesser person, and the other one won. The one won the competition, and it becomes more dominant, submissive relationship. That, is also something to notice and to see, are you always getting to the same type of relationship, or are there variations on the theme?
Is that what you do? You guide people to identify the type of relationship they're in, or when you work with couples?
Yeah, and I call it patterns. I say, notice the pattern that you have, pattern of interaction. And usually it's a very rigid pattern that repeats itself.
And when the person is in that pattern, what role does their armor, their protection play in this? You know, at what point does a person say, I've got to protect myself against this person? You know, every kid, almost every child, believes that their parents are absolutely wonderful at the beginning. At some point, a child wakes up and says, you know, they're not so wonderful. They're not so great. And I had that happen to me a number of times with different people in my community, the church. I remember seeing a priest who kept a gun handy, you know, all the time. And he was a mean guy. He beat up people. And I said, this can't be religion. This can't be grace. Another guy was serving an altar. He was a really known adulterer. You know, he was having relationships outside of his wife, outside of his marriage. And he was serving mass. He was an altar boy, because adults could be altar boys. And I said, I know who that guy is. He can't possibly be. This can't be the act of God. So I remember losing faith in my teachers. I remember losing faith in my schools and in my own parents. So each of us at some point find a way to find our own truth by no longer believing that that person that we have depended on, or those people that we idealized, represent the real truth. So we make an adjustment. We put on what you call our armor. What do you call it?
Pattern of our defense, of armor. And
your bodyguard.
The bodyguard. And it comes after a huge disappointment, just like we go through as kids. We idealize our parents, and then we get disappointed. It's very similar in our loving relationship. We idealize the other, and then we get disappointed.
Now, it's very hard once you idealize. Let's say you're in a fantasy relationship, and you find out your husband's cheating on you. It's very hard, because the entire house of cards falls down. It's very difficult to recover from that. Very, very difficult, because if your life was built on fantasy, and then you find out your fantasy was not true, the real offense is not what he did to you, but what you did to yourself, the way you blinded yourself during that time. And rather than face that, you would rather get rid of the mate.
And look for another fantasy.
Look for another fantasy.
Yes.
Well said. 212-957-2729. Dorothy's on the line. Hi there, Dorothy. It's Armand DeMille.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm so glad that you have taken this call. I was listening at your program, and I'm so fascinated on all the topics. And I was married like for 52 years, and I'm trying to find which one fits me, and I cannot find it. How do I do that?
Well, how were you in your relationship with your mate?
In my relationship with my husband, I consider it was very, very good. We were married like 52 years.
Did he die?
Yes, two weeks ago.
Oh, and I heard that. Wait a minute. If your husband of 52 years died 2 weeks ago,
yes.
Tell me what that's like. What's it like inside you after 52 years?
Horror, emptiness,
yeah.
And I'm trying to find a different world to really live in without him. He was the first man in my life, and I'm trying to find, it's almost like grasping for strings and, you know, trying to find a whole new lifestyle. I don't even want to live alone, really, so I don't know what to do with that.
So, Dorothy, when you walk around the house, feel the ghost of it. You know, you still feel...
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. Every minute of the second. I'm just about asking him, listen, where are we going to go today?
Yeah.
And then I just, so we both just had retired. He retired about a year. I retired by 2 years.
Dorothy, do you remember his smell? Do you have the smell of him?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
oh,
I thought so.
I'm so glad you said such a thing.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I thought I was crazy.
Yeah. What happens?
What happens is just that I smell his cologne. It seems like it's just settling around the house. And sometimes I thought I saw him, but I know that's not true.
Or you see a shadow and you think that's him.
I thought that was him.
Yeah.
You know, and when I get in my car, I forget that he's really not here.
Oh, what a thing you're going through, Dorothy. So did this happen suddenly, or was he sick for a while?
He wasn't actually sick. He was like, he had a massive heart attack. Hmm. And he was, you know, you could deal with it if it's a person that was sick and you had to feed him, and it takes you into the area, you know what's going to happen. But he had a clean bill of health, you know, and it just, all of a sudden, he had a massive heart attack. It was like, what? I seriously, to tell you the truth, I've been looking into areas to volunteer where I can actually, you know, even talk to other people concerning death and something, you know, especially with a husband, you know, especially mm-hmm. a husband, you know, because it's just something that I can't put no finger on.
Sure, and it's something that you're trying to find. Get in touch with me or send me an email. I'm going to connect you with some organizations and places where you can reach that. But before, so you could always send me an email, and I'll check that out for you. Dorothy, your husband, what was his name?
George Brown.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks. The spirit takes a long time to leave. As you could tell, it lingers around the house.
Oh, okay, that's what happened.
2 weeks. As that spirit is going to join whatever else it's going to join, is there something that you would like to say to George? Besides, I love you, is there something you would like to say to him? Mm-hmm. If he could hear it now, or if he could feel it now, wherever his spirit is there something you would like to say? And use this opportunity to do it, because we're going through the antennas, we're going out into space. We're bouncing it off. If he's anywhere around, he may be able to feel or hear your intent.
Yes, I would like to say to him, actually, we definitely said to one another, if whoever would be the one that would pass, would it be okay for me to have another partner, because mm-hmm. I can't stand to live alone?
Mm-hmm.
How could I... And I mean, I feel bad by even saying it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just getting to the point I just can't handle it alone.
So, George, we want you to know that Dorothy may choose to have a partner to be with her because she just can't stand being alone.
I don't want to live alone.
You don't want to live alone.
Uh-huh. And
could you say something? Can you say something about him?
Could I say something about him?
Yeah, just something about him.
Yes, he was a wonderful father, and I'm so grateful of the father that my husband was.
Say it to him. Say something. I'm so grateful for the man you were.
George, I'm so grateful of having you as my husband. You were a wonderful father. You're a wonderful husband. We spent 52 years together, and I'm so grateful that we were able to raise our 6 children.
Beautiful, Dorothy. Thank you. Thank you. You've just given something to a lot of people who have dealt with something like that.
We have educated children.
Mm-hmm.
We had no trouble with our kids. We had no kids out of order. I was a stern mother. He was on the soft side. I was on the hard side. We both worked, and we raised wonderful kids. Everybody got their own jobs, and they're raising good kids almost in the same pattern that we did.
Well, Dorothy, now you've got a lot of grandchildren around, right?
I have nine.
Nine grandchildren. That's like Linda right. Vanilla. She's got nine. Nine grandchildren. What a party that is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I always made big parties for all the family children.
I want to thank you for calling in. Do get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with some of the agencies, okay?
Okay. Would I have a phone number? Because I don't have a...
Sure. It's 212-757-4488. You call and leave your number with my assistant.
4488?
4488, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful that I called.
Me
thank
too.
You.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you. I would have never thought about anything like that.
Thank you so much. I guess George pushed her to do it. You know, we talk about these long relationships where they're cooperative. Like she said, you know, she was very strong and he was very quiet and he was kind of laid back. And that's the way he did it. And with that, they brought up a whole bunch of kids. And now, isn't it interesting? The way as we get to live older, the longer we live, the more grandchildren we have. And it's something like this is what it gets turned over to, you know, for the woman who survives someone. Right? She could got her grandchildren to turn to. It's like this second party. Nine grandchildren. What a treat that must be. 212-957-2729. We got just a couple of minutes here. But Carol, hi, this is Armand DeMille. Oops. Carol, hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
Good, good.
Armand. I just want to ask you, I listen to your show all the time, and a lot of us have challenges that we try to overcome. But are there some of us who won't be able to overcome the challenges and just feel that this life is too hard?
Yes.
We don't want to go on being in this life?
Sure. Sure.
And if you're one of those people, if I'm one of those people, how do I deal with that?
Yes, of course. Of course. Painful life. We get tired of pain. I know people who was in, I was just in a hospital for a while, surrounded by people. They all wanted to pull the plug.
Yeah.
You know, you know, what am I doing here? Why do I have to keep going through this?
Exactly.
You know,
how do you deal with that, though?
How do I go through it? Well, that. See, now what's happening with you? Did you lose someone?
Not recently, no, but I've... No.
But you're tired of going through this life, right?
It has always just seemed like a struggle for me.
Yeah. Was it a struggle even when...
I feel as if I should not have been born in this lifetime. I don't know what it is, but it just feels as if it's a constant struggle.
Yeah. Has it always been since you've been a baby?
Yes.
Right?
I've been a child.
You come from how many children? Nine children?
Five
children, and of the five children, where were you in that?
I'm the second.
You're the second one. And nobody ever really made you feel valuable.
No.
Well, that's where it starts.
I'm with a partner now who doesn't make me feel valuable.
Sure. You pick the same partner to try to get over this.
Yes.
So one of the things we do and one of the things we recommend when a person feels this way is we say, you know, there's something that's being brought back from childhood that we have to deal with. And what I find is when people go through that original question of what was it like to be little, what was it like to go through this, they find themselves freeing themselves from the shackles of current relationships that mimic and look like the old ones. And they begin to dance, perhaps for the first time. So don't give up on this, Carol, because
my struggle is I hear people saying they want a partner. My struggle is I don't want anyone.
I know. I
want
understand.
To be left alone.
Nothing wrong with that.
If I have a partner, I want to have my own space and he has his. I don't particularly want to live, or maybe I haven't met the right person who I want to be with all the time. But my struggle now is to want to be with someone.
I got you. So hang in there, Carol. I am sure there is light at the end of this tunnel. Okay?
I will take your word.
Thank you. We got to be going. We have to take a short break.
All right.
When we come back, we've got a little surprise for you as well. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Be right back.
in your mind, in your mind. One foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. Living at the bottom of the stairs of life, never a smile knocking on your door. The air is blue and so are you, prehistoric monsters on the floor. Last verse of your last song, and God don't hear dead men. The end of the line is in your mind, and you'll be staying in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind.
Bone for bone and skin for skin, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, heart for heart and soul for soul. Somebody said, what is truth? Lock it up and close it down, the sound of mourning like a dove. Beyond the rattle and roar, look into the face of love. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind, it all goes down
in your mind. One foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. You eat your fundamentalist pie with just a piece, you understand. You get the rest up in the sky. Praise and glory, wounded angels shuffling round the room. Eternity is down the hall, and you sit there bending spoons in your mind.
In your mind.
In your mind.
In your mind.
Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, sacrificial drops of pain on a silver-plated cross, sanctification on a chain. They say redemption draweth nigh, but storms of silence from above. Stop your ears and close your eyes, try to find the face of love.
It all goes down in your mind. It's really your attitude that counts, you know? It's how you approach it. Maybe, you know, if you had some wisdom that comes from not only the adult you, but from the younger you, maybe, you know, there were some things you knew as a kid that you forgot now, like the importance of play, like the importance of being able to love somebody without getting back necessarily what you need. So I'm gonna speak to one of my wise men who are here on the phone with me. Mike, gonna consult with Lucas. Hi there, Lucas. This is Armand DeMille.
How's it going, DeMille?
Good, good. How's it going, Lucas?
This really is good.
Good. Hey, I'm Lucas, tell me something. I wanna know something.
What?
What is it? Who's your best friend?
My little sister Noelle, she's 4.
Your little sister Noelle. Who? How about somebody in school that you have?
My friend Kai.
Kai. Okay. So, what makes you and Kai good friends? What is it about him that says to you, "This is my best friend"?
We're really the opposite in a way.
Yeah. Okay. That's important.
And that's kind of what makes us good friends.
And what way are you opposite?
Like, he's in the bath bomb and skateboarding. We always want to play different games and stuff. But in the end, we always find a fun compromise, and we have the best time.
So who is the more challenging? Are you the more aggressive, or is he the more aggressive? Who's the one who's going to take the risks, the most risks, you or him?
I would say me.
You. Okay, and he holds back a little bit, and then when the two of you get together, you have a good time.
Yeah.
All right. Now, do you ever think about what it would be like to be later in life and to be all adult and going to school and then after school being married and having... Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, how do you see yourself in the future?
I see myself with a family.
A family? What kind of family would you like to have?
I don't know.
If you see it. Okay. Do you want a dog, too?
I would think, yeah. I would see myself with a dog.
Okay, and you would see yourself with a family.
And uh-huh.
In this family that you see, do you think everybody would be getting along nicely?
Yeah.
You wouldn't imagine yourself in a relationship that would be terrible, right?
No, no arguing, no fighting, just love and happiness.
And if there is arguing and fighting, what does that tell you?
Well, it's no big deal. We could just get over it and everything will go back to normal, happy and loving like before.
You've learned a great deal. See, you live with your mom, right?
My mom and my dad.
Uh-huh. And are you with your mom right now?
I'm at my house in my bedroom.
You're in your private place. Well, Lucas, if it's all right with you, every now and then, I may have to call on you just for a consultation because we need the wisdom of the ages. You know,
really?
I got Julian here. He's 21 years old, and there you are, 10 years old, and you know some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I've been listening to your show my whole life.
Your whole life? For 10 years?
At my house, we don't have TV, and my parents think it's really good to just not sit around watching TV all day and to go outside and create. And
what a nice thing. Well, how would you like to come here and sit in the studio with us?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That would be the best thing that has ever happened to me.
Well, let's talk to your mom and let's make that arrangement and let's have it happen. It definitely will happen.
Really?
Sometime within the next 2 weeks, I want to have you on the air right here in the studio with me. You can't imagine what I look like, can you?
No.
So I've just a voice you've been hearing.
Yeah, my whole life.
For 10 years. Who's that voice, right? Who's that guy? I look forward to meeting with you.
Really?
Yeah, I really
Thank you.
Do. This is going to happen. Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you.
Sure. Sure, we have to have a consulting team. You know, Lucas sounds like he's awful wise. Whatever his parents did where they decided we won't have a television, it didn't seem to have damaged him too much. You know, it didn't seem to have taken away from his mind. I bet he doesn't play many video games with guns and stuff either. You know, but I think he's a skateboarder. 212-957-2729. One of the aspects of relationships that seem to be... One of the aspects of relationships that seem to be a difficulty has to do with guilt. You know, what is that guilt about, Aura? Can we talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, guilt is a sense that you have done something wrong. And within the relationship, it can happen a lot that you have this unease, you know, you're fighting or you lied or you look at your partner's email when you weren't supposed to. So you feel guilty. And the thing about guilt is that it's an action that can be repaired. You can tell the truth about it and apologize and repair the situation. But the guilt also triggers shame. Once you feel shame, which is what we call I feel bad about it, that's about shame. That has to do more with your character. You feel that the guilt that what you have done is reflecting on your character. And it may say that you are actually rotten to the core. That is when shame is pathological, is toxic, is when you believe you're worthless.
Hmm. So one of the things you're saying, Aura, is that in every relationship, couples get a chance to slip a misfortune or an unethical thing or something like that. Yes. You know, like, I didn't want you to know I was flirting with the person in the bar, or whatever it is that you pass by.
Yes.
And whether or not you should have spoken about it, whether or not it was really necessary to talk about, there is a certain amount of guilt that you have for not having been upfront about it. Now, we're not saying you should be upfront about everything, but that thing, that feeling of guilt, drives deeper and sometimes turns into shame, which turns into an incrimination of the self.
That's right.
And that's difficult to work with.
And that's difficult because there is no repair. If I am worthless as a person, then I cannot find a way to repair it. It's, of course, a distortion, but that a lot of us walk around with that sense of shame about who we are and how inadequate and not good enough we are.
Ori Amini Morrison, family therapist. Hey, we've got Rick on the line. Hello, Rick. This is Armand DeMille. Thanks for waiting for us.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. And I just would like to start off by explaining I married a woman who had significant loss before we met. She lost her husband, her son, and her brother in a boating accident. And we came to be about maybe 4 to 5 years later. And after 24 years of marriage and a tumor removal, she decided she was going to move on. And she moved on with like a person within our inner circle. And devastating. This was the person who I was going to take in to our home to help him get his self together after his divorce. And that I found out about all this shortly after my mom had passed. I would say about maybe 3 to 4 days after that. And then 3 weeks after her funeral, she asked for the divorce and gave me the paperwork. And I'm having a difficult time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Rick, I mean, you've been sandbagged. You know, this is all... Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you put out fires for a living?
No, I work with developmentally disabled people.
Okay, and what do you do with them?
We do enclaves, like we go out and do jobs and things like that and help them, acclimate to life.
And what happens to you? What happens to you when you feel angry?
What happens to me when I feel angry?
Yeah.
I get in my head, I guess.
And what do? You suppress it? You don't express your anger?
Yeah, I do suppress it quite a bit. I did that with both of her and the son that survived. She had a son that survived the boating accident. Mm-hmm. And I knew it would take most of my time to help him become a viable part of society.
But they all betrayed you.
Yeah.
Every one of them looked at Rick and said, you know, Rick, he's not aware. He's not watching what's going on. We need something other than you.
Yeah.
And they turned away from you. And this is, it's almost like typical of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. I want to say clueless, but I kind of like being clueless in a way because it's safe. I don't know.
Well, that's a very important point. What's safe about being clueless?
Well, you don't see, like, I guess, the bad things or things that you need to...
Exactly.
...address.
And that's what I was talking about in the fantasy relationships.
Yeah.
So when a person has a fantasy relationship, they could build a relationship as beautiful as they'd like it to be. But
yeah,
then
man.
The other person is always a spoiler because they bring in some reality.
Yeah. Well,
and it shatters the whole thing.
The weird part about this, the neat part about this is that, you know, her son didn't look at reality, and that was my goal, to get him to see reality, because he would often drift into fantasy to help him deal with what it is he had to deal with, because he was actually in the boating accident and saw everyone die. And she, on the other hand, or not on the other hand, but she also, you know, had to go into some kind of other world, and it left me, I mean, the whole time I was term is, but to try to help them be a part of the world and a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't do it, and it just, it was frustrating. I mean, I listened to what you were talking about, the different relationships, and I got to tell you, we were, I got to say, almost all of those descriptions.
At different times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All of that. Well, it sounds to me, Rick, that you're kind of tired of of being asleep.
Yeah.
You know, it's time, it may be time to just get yourself into a different framework. So the next person you pick doesn't have to be crippled and depending on you. You know, and the next person you have would not have to be the kind of person who's who you believe you're going to help.
Well, I think the hardest part about it is letting myself be that vulnerable again.
Yeah. Well, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe that vulnerability was a trick. Because maybe, Rick, you know, you really like being alone.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I've been alone. We've been apart. Matter of fact, I built a house and everything for them and all that. And I don't know. I guess being alone is kind of nice.
Yes, you can't get hurt.
Pardon?
You can't get hurt, yes.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Okay,
I
so it's time, though, Rick. I hear you saying yes. You know, it's time. If this is something you want to change, if this is something you want to do, it's time. You need the works of Kevin O'Donoghue. You know, he's the kind of guy who brings people around to that kind of reality. That's his work.
How do I get in touch with him?
Send me an email. I'll put you in touch with him, okay?
Okay.
Good to talk to you, Rick.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. And thanks. And I got to tell you, the work that you do is just amazing. I hear how you reach people, and it's something else.
Thank you, Rick.
Amazing thing. You're welcome.
This is Armand DeMille with you. The telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Or I see repeated patterns, or over and over again we see them. And then at some point a person says, no more of this.
Yeah, the pattern of the helper, who just wants to help and save people. And they keep themselves blind, not seeing the full picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens after a while is you go through that a number of times, and then you wake up. Then you say, I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore.
And the actual disappointment is a chance and an opportunity to open up and grow from the experience. It's a painful experience, and you can grow.
Youssef, hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the line.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Good, Youssef.
I have a quick question, but unfortunately, I'm going to answer the question, though. My question to you is, what's your purpose of life? But I just see that your purpose is to make people happy. You speaking to this young man made me feel, I don't know, I feel so happy. The way you talk to him, the way he talks back to you, it made me feel so, I don't know how to express it. It's good. Thank you for your program.
Well, let me ask you something, Youssef.
Yes.
The way that I spoke to him and the way he spoke to me was with respect. And with that kind of respect, you get this acceptance of another human being. I don't want him to be happy. I don't want you necessarily to be happy. But when someone finds someone where they say, hey, I could really talk about myself and I feel safe. Like, for example, Youssef, you've been a very private man most of your life, haven't you?
That's right.
Right, very private. So there are things about you that you've gone through that you're not likely to share with people.
Yeah, I mean, most of time, yeah, but most of time, I do consult people before doing anything, though, and this I learned that from my mom. I made up my mind what I want to do, but I always have to seek somebody somehow before I go on doing it.
You have to do what to somebody?
Like, speak to someone.
You have to speak to someone before you continue with what you're doing.
That's right.
You have to check with them because your mother told you you don't necessarily have to trust yourself, but trust someone else.
Yeah, at least not necessarily trust, but check with someone and see what the person has to say.
I Yusef, let me ask you something. What do you need most in your life?
What do I need?
Yes.
That's a tough question. But my purpose of life is make others happy by making myself happy.
Making people happy is your purpose in life.
That's right. That's right.
Now, what do you need more? Do you need someone to love you, or do you need more money?
No, I have love more than I needed.
You have more love than you need.
That's true. That's right.
So
that's
does right. It ever feel like it's suffocating you, Yusef?
No. Actually, that's the reason why I call it. When you start the program, the lady that's hosting with you, her first intervention just hit me because that's exactly me. When I first got married, I think I was a trouble one. I was a troublemaker. In any equation, it's me that would yell and me that would scream. And this lady would just sit down there looking at me, not saying a word. So at the end of the day, I found myself like being stupid. I'm sorry for the word. That's where I was coming down. I started considering situations. I'm like, why would this person all the time, why is it that it's only me that will have something bad to say about something? And this lady would not say anything, even though she's right and well-educated, more educated than me, because I left my wife back home in Africa and while I came here. So she was able to acquire more degrees than I did. But this lady would sit there and look at you, listen to what you have to say, and nothing. So that's what started bringing me down. And from there, we had a great relationship. We're more than friends. We've been married for 11 years, 3 kids. And right now I'm here, I'm full-time. I drive taxi, Newark taxi, and I go to school full-time. I'm my third-year engineering student. And this lady does everything. I'm always happy when I get home.
Well, Yusef, you sound like you've got a lot of good stuff going for you, and your spirit certainly is great. So I appreciate every bit of sharing you do. And, you know, driving a taxi in New York, you get a lot of opportunity to share some of that. You know, you don't even have to say anything. It just sometimes it's just a smile. So I hope I run into you in a cab one day.
Unfortunately, maybe not, because I drive a Newark airport.
Right, yes. I've gotten in cabs and people say, hey, you're Armand DeMille. And I say, that's right, because they listen in the radio in the car.
I hope one day I'll see you one day.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much for the program.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille. So relationships are not an easy thing. It's not simple. It sometimes takes a lot more to work at it, to wake up to it, to face it, to kind of invest in it. And it's not easy. Not easy, right, Aura?
Not easy. Especially when you go through the disappointment, the disillusionment. And what can happen, the potential can happen, is that you can come to therapy, speak about what is going on with you from the vulnerable place, and then live life without illusions, if you can.
Hey, we've got Jay on the line. Hi, Jay, it's Armand DeMille. I've got just 1 minute, and I wish I could take your call in depth.
Well, luckily, the drunk version of my prior relationship broke up with me. And I didn't want to be the enabler, so it was kind of a gift.
Wow. When did this happen?
Oh, I don't know, 3 days ago.
Wow. You too, Jay.
But it was short.
I know.
And the sober version of her tried to contact me after she said she wasn't going to, and I said, no way.
Takes a lot of courage, Jay, on your part. Takes a lot of courage to help out in the way you are. But listen, if you would you send me an email so you and I could have some kind of conversation about it, maybe on the air next week, okay? It's because we have to be going.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. My heart's with you.
Thanks.
Now, it always sounds like it's easier than it sounds, you know, but it's not so easy. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Special thanks to Ori Amini Morrison and Julian Joiello. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. You can go to my website, thepositivemind.com.